Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast, here today with Israeli archivist Jeff Weiss. If you appreciate and find value in these important discussions, please consider supporting the show so I can continue to bring you such amazing and esteemed guests. Details are pinned in the comments below. If you've been to Israel since October 7th, excuse me, 2023, you've seen the stickers that adorn every light post, every bench, every window, every wall, and particularly in Tel Aviv, every inch. These ubiquitous micro memorials each pay tribute to a fallen Israeli with a photo, a name, and an inspirational quote. Each and every one honoring an Israeli hero, an inspiration, and a universe. It's very easy to walk by these tiny tributes without notice or to look for a minute and just go on with your day. But Jeff Weiss did just the opposite. He started reading the stickers and he wanted more. He wanted to learn the story of each person's life and to share it with the world, to create a precious online memorial that will bear testament even after the stickers fade. And so, Jeff created Stickers of Meaning as a gift to Am Yisrael, a nation that forever bleeds for its fallen and stands tall and strong with its lions. The Stickers of Meaning project was initiated by Jeff Weiss, an author and entrepreneur who made Aliyah in 2022. Jeff began noticing these stickers on the streets of Tel Aviv, always taking the time to read them. Realizing that these stickers might eventually disappear, Jeff started photographing them, not just for himself, but with the understanding that their message needed to be shared with others. This project is his way of ensuring that these ideas live on. Jeff, thank you so much for joining me today. What a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Shauna, and the pleasure is truly all mine.
So, I'd like to start. You're an American who made Aliyah to Israel about 3 years ago. As you know, we just had Veterans Day here in America, in the whole Western world. But in Israel, of course, they have different days of remembrance. For most people in America, Veterans Day is just another day off of work. We're a nation where very few people have served or even know anyone who has ever served. And this is in stark contrast to Israel, where almost every man and woman alike is, in fact, a veteran. Jeff, how do you think that this dynamic shapes Israeli society and its deep and profound connection to its soldiers?
Well, I think, to your point, everybody here knows soldiers. Most families among the portion of the Israeli population that serves, which is most of the population here, there's a tradition of serving. The men and women both. So your siblings are serving. Your parents have both served. Your grandparents. So everybody feels connected. The army truly feels like the army of the country. It's the people's army, and so there is tremendous identification with those who serve, tremendous sympathy and support, and a tremendous impulse to honor those that we lose.
Yeah, I always like to note, particularly when I'm talking on or around a holiday in Israel, how the way that Israel honors holidays is so different than America. In America, it means barbecues and mattress sales. In Israel, it means the whole entire country stops and literally stops and pays tribute, which again, I think speaks very highly to this connectivity to a shared understanding of experience and values.
It's funny that you say that. I think so. Basically, the day for honoring fallen soldiers comes the day before Independence Day,
Yep.
and they kick off the first day with a siren, and everybody stands at attention. Cars stop on the roads. It is incredibly respected, incredibly taken seriously. And it is a very challenging day, primarily, of course, for those who are connected to a loss. And then the siren goes off in the early evening to symbolize the movement from the day of mourning to the day of celebration. And it is a raucous day of celebration with a barbecue tradition. And it kind of encapsulates, I think, Naomi Shemer's famous thing, the honey and the sting. It's Israel is this incredible mix of bitter and sweet, and you really see it in that combination of days of observance.
Absolutely. It also goes back to the very famous and I think biblical aphorism, they came, they tried to kill us, they failed, let's eat.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a great summation of Jewish holiday, very much so.
So anyway, in all seriousness, so in the real world, outside of Israel, when war breaks out, the normal thing for people to do is to flee to safety. When Russia invaded Ukraine, almost 7 million people fled the country and became refugees. But Israel is different. When Hamas attacked on October 7th, Israelis abroad did everything they could to immediately return home and serve their nation. We saw that same extraordinary response again during the 12-day war with Iran. I know so many people personally who felt hopeless in personally sorry, I'm at such a loss for words these days. Distraught about not being in Israel with their friends, with their family, with serving as Iran was attacking, which is not a normal response.
Yeah.
What do you think it is that drives Israelis to run towards danger when so many others run away?
There's a tremendous feeling of community here, and it manifests itself in a variety of ways. I think one way, of course, is the one that you've described, that in these times of trial, people, in particular those who are capable of serving, want to rush back and do their share. There's also a tremendous spirit of volunteering here. After October 7th, there were all sorts of groups that popped up to do volunteering, to go south to pick crops because a lot of the farm workers had left the country. I did that a few times, but there were people who were doing it a lot. There were folks who were gathering supplies for the folks who've been evacuated from the south and then later from the north. There's just a tremendous feeling of family and community here, and we see that in different ways. I'd always heard over the years before making Aliyah that these times of great turmoil and strife in Israel, in many ways, ironically, perhaps brings out the best in Israelis, and I did get to see that. And this really is an extraordinary country, and these really are extraordinary peoples, and extraordinary people. And I think these stickers are just one example of what makes them so special.
Yeah, they truly, truly extraordinary. And I wish more people understood the depth of that. So, before we get into your sticker project, I'd like to talk about your book, Fighting Back, Stan Andrews and the Birth of the Israeli Air Force. In this book, you tell the remarkable story of really what we're talking about right now, a Jewish New Yorker who voluntarily flew to Israel in
48.
48, he went to fight for the fledgling Jewish state. This tradition of running into danger to protect our people runs really deep. What parallels do you see between Stan Andrews' story and the stories you are seeing and have seen in this war of redemption?
I think for me personally, Stan inspired me. He was someone who had so much going for him. After World War II, he served with distinction in the Pacific. He was a B-25 bomber pilot, flew over 40 missions. He was a brilliant student. He was an artist. He was a writer. Just had immense talent. Was studying for a master's at UCLA when it became clear that that upon proclamation of a Jewish state in Israel, there was going to be a war. And he decided that he couldn't stand idly by and had to take part in it and had to do what he could to prevent a second Holocaust only 3 years after the end of World War II. So for me, in life, candidly, I look to be inspired. And Stan's story very much inspired me, and these stickers have very much inspired me as well. He was someone who, you never would have predicted would have gotten involved. He was an entirely assimilated Jew. He had changed his last name from Anneckstein to Andrews. He was not bar mitzvahed and never set foot in a synagogue in his life. And yet he felt like, this was where he needed to be in this time of conflict. And for that, he's a figure of great admiration for me.
How did you find his story?
We wrote a prior book. When I say we, my co-author is my brother Craig. We wrote a prior book in 1998 called I Am My Brother's Keeper. And it was about this group of 1,000 or so Americans and a few Canadians who in 1948 went to Israel to serve in the war. And a significant part of them were in the Air Force and really helped get the Air Force established and on its feet. And in the course of doing that book, I came across Stan's story and really wanted to do just to devote an entire book just to him. So we finished the first book, and then I set out to uncover his story, which ended up taking a lot longer than I had anticipated, but it was a really extraordinary and delightful journey. So it took a long time to basically, and over the course of about 15 years of research, track down high school classmates, college classmates, World War II squadron mates. I even went to a World War II squadron reunion of his, Israeli squadron mates, family members who were still alive when we started the research,
Wow.
including a sister and a sister-in-law, two of his best friends. Basically trying to get all the information we could. We tracked down high school essays, high school yearbook, college yearbook, a World War II squadron yearbook that he took part in, a bunch of documents from archives here in Israel, a number of which we had to get declassified. So it took a while to kind of pull the whole story together because, of course, we did not have access to Stan himself. But it was. In many ways, it felt like a bit of a treasure hunt, and an extraordinary one at that.
In the inception, it was a country of a lot of Holocaust survivors, maybe 1,000, as you said, volunteers from abroad trying to scrap together some planes, some this, some that, to whoever would sell it to them, Czechoslovakia, basically, and nobody else. Yes, not even America. It is truly remarkable to behold how a tiny nation that today is no more than 10 million people transformed this scrappy skeleton crew into one of the world's most indomitable air forces in less than 80 years. I'm curious. The book Fighting Back was published in 2022. And that's the same year you actually made Aliyah. Did the research you did for the book and the inspiration that you got from this work influence your decision at all to make a new life in Israel?
It did. You're the first person to ask me that question. It very much did. Making Aliyah was something that was always kind of on my to-do list, something I always hoped to do one day. And of course, that one day kept getting pushed out longer and longer. And then as I was finishing that book, it occurred to me that if I so admired Stan for essentially living his truth and doing what he felt like he needed to do to give his life purpose and meaning, I should do that too. So I decided to basically take his example very much to heart, and it's been a wonderful and very meaningful time over here, particularly these last couple of years with all that has been going on.
Wow. That's what we call inspiration. My goodness, to uproot your entire life. It's no small feat, believe me. I've been working towards Aliyah for the last couple of years, and it's not easy to get all the pieces in place. So, kol hakavod. So I do want to ask one more question before we get into the stickers, and that is another personal question. As a recent Olah, which means, for those who don't know, a man who has moved to Israel, an immigrant, from the States just 1 year before the start of the Gaza war, do you think your experience of the war differed from that of most Israelis?
Yes, in the following sense, I don't have I have not I never served in the army. I didn't have to serve during this period. I don't have siblings or children or relatives serving. So I think for so many families here, this has been an unbelievably difficult time in ways that I can't even imagine, and certainly it was not something that I had to endure. So for me, obviously you had to deal with alerts and going into a shelter and things of that sort, but that's nothing compared to what so many of these families have struggled with, especially those who have served literally hundreds of days or have family members who have had to do that. And I can't even imagine. And of course, these hostage families, that's just a completely unimaginable level of suffering. So I think in that sense, absolutely. For me, it's been a very different experience.
Interesting, because another aspect that I was thinking about, because my sister lives in Tel Aviv, though she made Aliyah in 2010, so a long time ago. This is her first major war. I mean, there have been skirmishes, but I know in the beginning she was much more rattled than other Israelis, though after a while it just becomes normal, which is sad.
Yeah, I think honestly, I think a lot of it depends on whether you have a secure room in literally your apartment, what's called a mamada, a merchav mugan diratia, an apartment secure room. And if you do, and I've been fortunate to have one of those, if you get an alert at 3 o'clock in the morning, you get out of your bed, you walk down the hall, you go into another room, you close the big metal door, and you wait it out. A lot of folks don't have that. And so at 3 o'clock in the morning, they're going down the street to a proper shelter. And if they have small kids or elderly relatives, that's no small thing. And here in Tel Aviv, basically for rockets from Gaza or Lebanon, we basically had like 90 seconds. The Iran thing, you typically had kind of a 7, 6, 7, 8 minute heads up that you might get an alert. And then once you got that alert, you had 90 seconds. So I think for people who did not have their own in-unit secure room, oh my God, just incredibly difficult, especially because so many of these things did in fact happen in the middle of the night.
So going back to the Air Force for just one moment, that quite remarkably, in all of the stunning and daring Air Force missions that Israel has conducted in this war, as close as Gaza and as far as Iran, Qatar, and very famously Qatar, and Yemen, which was extremely far away, not a single plane was shot down. And by all accounts, every pilot was home safely in time for breakfast. Tragically, however, over 1,150 Israeli security personnel, including IDF soldiers, police, and Shin Bet, have lost their lives in this war. And of course, just under 1,200 civilians on October 7th itself. In the wake of such devastating losses, people all over the world started printing. Sorry, not all over the world. What am I talking about? In all over the world, we were doing the opposite. We were ripping it down. People all over Israel started printing up stickers memorializing their loved ones and sticking them on every available surface. I literally don't think you could walk 10 feet anywhere in Tel Aviv without encountering at least one, sometimes 10 or even dozens. These stickers have become so commonplace that It's easy to just walk by them without any notice. To be honest, I'm so used to stickers in general in Tel Aviv that on my first trip back after 10/7, when these stickers were just first starting to appear, my sister actually had to point them out to me. I just didn't notice. Now they're a lot harder to miss, I have to be honest. But what was it about these stickers, that struck you so hard and made you take notice?
I think for me, what happened was I read one of the stickers and it had a picture of a particular soldier, his name, year of birth, year of death, and I think a unit symbol as well. But then it had this phrase, this sentence, and the sentence basically was he fought out of love for those behind him rather than hatred of those in front of him. And I found that so powerful, and I felt so accurately reflective of truly how Israelis think, that truly this is a war fought out of love for the civilians here, to protect them, and not out of any kind of hatred of even of Hamas or certainly of the citizens of Gaza. And so I decided, you know what, I need to pay more attention to these stickers. And made it a point to just start reading all of them and then also to start photographing them because I started to fear that at some point they're going to disappear. And at the beginning, I didn't have necessarily a concrete idea what I might do with it, but just started to pay attention. And the more I saw, the more I photographed, the more I realized, wow, these messages are all positive. They are inspirational. They are loving. They are joyful. They are kind. They are just so extraordinary, and they really are for the living, to help encourage the living to live their very best lives. And I just found that so unusual. I think in any country that honors its soldiers, you could imagine something like this, but without the motto. Just here's this wonderful young person that we lost, and let's remember them and honor them. And I think that's amazing. But this is a whole nother approach that I think is so uniquely Israeli. And so yeah, I was amazed by it. And then the more I saw and the more I realized that it was a phenomenon in my view, the more I committed I became to trying to do something to make sure that we recorded this, we captured this, and we didn't lose it once, inevitably the stickers start to peel off and disappear.
Yeah. And I do want to, because I don't know why I said all across the world instead of across Israel, but I do want to draw this stark contrast that as around the world, anti-Israel advocates were so rabid about tearing down hostage posters. Hostage posters, this isn't even about a war, this is basic morality. When you go to Israel, even today, even 2 years later, it's ubiquitous. This is a country that really, really, as the necklace says, I always like to talk about the necklace, because the thing that people don't understand about this first sentence, Halev shelanu shavui ba'aza, is that lev is singular, but shelanu is plural. So that there very much is this shared heart and this shared soul, that when one life is torn, everybody's is torn. Even with the four hostages who are deceased, there's this overwhelming feeling of sadness that we have to get these four deceased hostages home. Yes.
I think very much over the course of the war, there has been a black cloud, and the country has done its best to continue to function, for kids to continue to go to school, businesses to continue to operate, even with alerts and all of the rest, people just try to go get on with their lives. And yet, I think for every day that there was a living hostage in Gaza, it was a giant black cloud over the country. And with the release of the last living hostages, it was almost like you could sense a collective exhalation, like kind of a breathing out, like, wow, we can, we don't have that horror anymore. And of course, There are still four bodies to bring back, but I think it's a different kind of emotional trauma that to try to imagine or to try not to imagine what these live hostages were going through. And that was so, I think, traumatic for the country as a whole. And I do think that there's a palpable sense that just the mood has lightened since I went actually to Hostage Square for those for that last release, the last two releases
Oh, you.
actually. It was
Wow.
powerful.
Yeah, that truly was a historical moment. I just want to say on a personal level that there are four families that are still suffering, and we have to be careful about becoming complacent, because this is part of the psychological torture, is that if only four families feel as if they've been forgotten because the live hostages are out. Most of the murdered hostages are out. I will not take this off until those last four are home. And of course, for those who don't know, one of whom is actually a Thai worker. He's not Israeli. He has nothing to do with the conflict. He probably didn't even know about the conflict. And yet the Israelis still hold him in their hearts the same. And there is supposedly one of the four is coming home this evening. Actually,
Wow.
right now,
Wow.
supposedly. So we'll see. So good. Sorry. It's a diversion because I know I have an overactive empathy gene, but I can't imagine, particularly this one kid's family, thinking, wow, and we're one of the last four, and what. Just feeling so far and so helpless and so forgotten and so, do we matter? We still have this anguish. Anyway, going back to the stickers, and actually something much more positive. One thing, in a minute we're going to go through some of the archives so you could share them, but even for those who haven't seen the stickers, you could see this all over social media. That one thing that immediately stands out from the photographs that are featured is that they all have these beautiful smiles in heartfelt eyes, wherein even in the pro-Hamas world, when they try to show a soldier, it's not a pretty picture. It's an angry person, if you could see their face at all. But the Jews, Israel always chooses to portray their people, their heroes, as people who care and who love and who are human and who have a beautiful soul, right? Their ruach just shines through these photos. What do you think that, like, literally the nature of these photos, the choice of these photos, even soldiers in full gear, like there's nothing serious about their face. They're smiling and in their loving life, and it's so obvious. What do you think this tells us about Am Yisrael that the world just doesn't seem to understand?
Well, it's funny. One of the things that I realized the more stickers that I captured was that they seem to fall into ultimately, I think, 15 or 16 distinct categories. And one of the things we've tried to do on the site is to actually categorize them, to label them, and they're searchable based on these different labels, different characteristics, or different values that they are that they're communicating. Things like joy and responsibility and overcoming and living a daring life and love and all really incredibly positive and wonderful qualities that they are essentially exhorting people to internalize into their lives. And I think joy ended up being, about the most popular one. There were so many about the importance of smiling and laughing, and there's just a positivity here. I mean, I'm sure you're aware that year after year, Israel ranks as one of the happiest countries in the world, which is an astonishing thing at a certain level when you consider that this is a country that basically has been at war every day of its existence since May 14th, 1948. This is a tough neighborhood, and there is always a danger that at some point a war could happen. And yet these are happy people, joyful people, and they prize those qualities and they seek to cultivate them. And I think in some ways Israelis have tapped into something powerful, which is, the Viktor Frankl book, Man's Search for Meaning. And I think living a meaningful life actually is a great way to make yourself happier. And I think Israelis really cherish that, and I think the stickers reflect it.
Was Man's Search for Meaning any sort of an inspiration for your choice of the title Stickers of Meaning?
Very, very much so. That book, almost every bookstore I walk into in Israel, the book is not just available, but it's actually like among, the current books, the sort of new releases. And after October 7th, that book became a bestseller again in Israel. One of the hostages, one of the six who were murdered in the tunnel, Hirsch Goldberg Polan, he quoted from that book to the other hostages that he encountered during. During his long period of captivity before he was killed. I think the quote was something like, a person who has a why can endure anyhow. And I think one of those hostages who encountered Hirsch and who made it back actually has tattooed that on onto his body. And so I think that's a very, very powerful thing. There was another hostage, Keith Siegel, who would gather others together at night and ask everybody to say one thing they were thankful for that day. And imagine that, they're being caged up and mistreated and all of the rest, and yet still looking for to express some gratitude. And that's a powerful thing. I think that kind of positivity is extraordinary.
Eli Schwabi actually talks about Hirsch telling him that quote in the book Hostage, which is definitely a worthwhile read. That I did make it to. I just finished it last week, and then I started your book. And I'm not the fastest reader, so I'm like I'm not gonna be able to read this whole book. But I got about halfway through, and then I'm like, what happens in the end? And then I missed what happened in the end. I just saw that you wrote that you met him, and in I think it was in quotes. But as far as the was that Keith Siegel? Because I was talking about that the other day as well. But the ending of that story about the finding one thing a day was that they wound up it apparently like they were saying five or six after a while. Like even if it was just like that mean terrorist didn't show up today, that it really took on a life of its own. And in my theory, my Israeli happiness theory, and this far, far predates the war. I was talking to my sister about this when she first moved out there 15 years ago. Is the concept of living each day as if it's your last, because as you alluded to, that is and has always been since the moment of its inception, literally the moment of its inception, Israel has faced existential threat. I mean, 5 hours after Israel declared independence on May 14th, 1948, they were attacked from all borders with these nations that are like, and now we will kill you. And this year, Israel is number 8 on the happiness index in the middle of the hostage crisis, because that's only just come to some sort of a denouement quite recently, in the middle of the war, in the middle of thousands of injured, sorry, soldiers being injured, and in the trauma and everything, they're still number 8, which is nothing to sneeze at, you know?
Yeah. It's pretty breathtaking. It's an unusual place. I mean, there is a real feeling of belonging, of family, of community, and it's powerful. Yeah, of course, that family thing, has two sides to it. People will ask you very personal questions in a way that you might not be asked in other countries, which is okay. But I personally find it delightful. I love it. I've had an experience a couple times since I moved here where I've been out walking in Tel Aviv and I've heard the sort of unmistakable clatter of a bike crashing, somebody falling off of a bike. And instantly in all directions, I see people racing toward the person who's fallen down. And I find that very endearing.
I have a better story than that. You won't believe this. Okay, so my sister, who has like a zoo in her home, literally. She rescues pets for a living, and then if she can't adopt them out, she just keeps them. So she's got like 50. Anyway, we were at Dizengoff and Jabotinsky, right, which is right there, right in central Tel Aviv, one of the most the busiest intersections of, the walking area of Tel Aviv. And somebody's dog got loose and started running across the street. Okay. So, of course, my sister's like, must save dog. That's like her instant radar, must save dog. But here's what she did, because I guess I wasn't walking. I don't know why this happened, because I was right next to her, but she gave her purse to a stranger, so she could run after this dog. Maybe she already started running and she's like, I can't run with the purse. All I know is she gave it to a stranger. Now, in America, that stranger would have turned around and run in the other direction. In Israel, the stranger starts chasing Danny with the purse, and then, as you say, a whole stream of people start chasing them. Everybody's trying to like get this dog. And then a taxi driver pulled over and took Danny and the dog and the owner like to the thing, and the person gives her the purse, and she had no money, and he's like, it's okay, let's, and like, to me, it's funny, because what we, I think, forget is that Israel, culturally, and I'm talking about native Israelis, are actually living in an Arab world. And culturally, it is a sort of brusque society. And that's why they're called sabras. Very hard on the outside and very soft on the inside.
You know, it's funny. I was here for 2 years as a student in the 1980s, and in some ways, I feel like Rip Van Winkle, or somebody who had a time machine. And I'm constantly in my mind juxtaposing the Israel of 2020, these last 3 years, versus the Israel of 1983 and 1984.
Yes.
And really, back then, customer service here in Israel was not a priority. There was that real brusqueness, I think, on the part of Israelis, which was very, I think, off-putting to Americans. And really, I find Israel to be a very different country now. I think it's very, the service is fantastic. The restaurants are terrific. The shopping is, I think, every bit as good as anywhere else in the world. And Israelis here in Tel Aviv are really a delight. I don't see that kind of, every now and then I'll see like an older person walking and maybe, shouting into his phone or something like that, and I'm reminded
Yes.
of the Israelis of the 1980s. But it's a different country now, in my opinion.
I think it's changed a lot, honestly, in the last 10 years. I wouldn't even go back to the 80s. It's funny. I think that my first few, so oddly enough, I hadn't, the first time I went was in 2010. Which is funny, because I've been an Israel activist for decades, but it was just very hard for me to get there because of work and everything. Since then, I come about 3 times a year. But I was off put by the brusqueness, and I think that it left a flavor in my mouth. So, not bitter. I've always loved Israel, and again, I still would spend, three times a year, a few weeks. It's where my soul feels home. But right before the pandemic, 2019, my whole family went, many of whom had either not been there in decades or had never been there, and they were all talking about how hospitable everyone was, and I'm like, wait, are we in the same country? And I guess I didn't even notice that it had changed, because and this is, this says a lot to the human condition, that we set something in our minds, and it's very hard, even with the evidence in front of us, sometimes to shift that. So I had to start looking at Israel differently. And of course, since 2023, since October 7th, everything has changed. Everything. But I think that also, and I hate to say this, because everybody makes the European, oh, they're just a bunch of Europeans, argument, which is so false. But I do think that, the major influx of Europeans and also South Americans and also, Australians and everybody in the last 10 to 15 years since anti-Semitism around the world has gotten so out of control. Yes, for those who are listening, it's not only in the last 2 years, this has been a scary and rising tide. With that come some cultural norms that I think also shifts the energy of this of the country.
Yeah, I think very much so. I think it kind of balances things out and it brings in other cultures, other influences. Also, I think lots of Israelis, especially, tech entrepreneurs and the like, will spend a few years in the States, perhaps attending university or working in a tech startup or things like that. And then they come back and they bring often the best of what they encountered. And of course, the US has wonderful customer service, a wonderful, retail shopping experiences, and I think a lot of Israelis get a taste of that and decide, you know what, actually I think they're onto something here, and this is something that we need back in Israel. And so I do feel like it's just a different, it's a different place. It's progressing and it's growing, it's improving all the time, and even under these difficult conditions, and it's a wonderful thing to see.
If there's one thing I could say about Jewish people, we thrive under difficult conditions. It's what we do. Anyway, getting back to the Stickers of Meaning project. Sorry about that tangent. I first of all, I encourage everyone to visit the website. I have to be honest, Jeff, the thing I hate about the website is leaving it. I think for the I it's sort of funny, but I'm actually not joking, but in the same reason that I feel for these four hostage bodies, I feel like when I close your website, or I haven't even closed it, it's been open now since the day you reached out to me. But with like closing it on any of these lives, like breaks my heart. So it's a bit of a rabbit hole for me, to be honest. Do you know how many stickers last I saw was 400-ish. Do you know how many stickers have been cataloged at this point?
I think we're coming up on 500 or so, and we're continuing to bring in new stickers. I think we just brought in like 10 within the last week or so, and we are hoping to get as close to a complete set as we can. We won't get all the way there for sure, because there are so many, and not all of them are well distributed. But we're going to do the very best that that we can, because I think it's so important to make sure that we don't lose these.
So, a logistical question. Actually, I have a few logistical questions. First of all, do you have, I mean, stickers are added all the time, but do you have some sort of mapping process where you know where you've already looked? Are you searching them out, or is it just like, oh, I'm going to a new restaurant tonight, I'll look at the sticker? Because you can't have 500 cataloged in your mind to know. Do you scan each one and say, is this already in the database? Are you like, oh, I haven't looked at this corner of is it just Tel Aviv? Are you No, I think that you had a short with the woman in Jerusalem. Was that accurate? Or
Yeah, we so basically there's a group of us. We've got like maybe three or four of us. There are other people who've helped us out on a part-time basis. We photograph stickers wherever we see them. The train stations are an especially good place to find amazing clusters of stickers. And at this point, the core of us, we kind of know what we have and what we don't have. If we see a sticker that we don't think we've seen before, we take a picture and then we compare it internally. We have like a spreadsheet of everything that we have, and if we have it already, great. If we don't have it, then what we basically do is we try to find the family. And even though we've photographed the stickers, we made a decision early on that we would not put them up without the consent of the families, because we want to make sure that they're okay with us doing this. And so that adds a little bit of complexity to the project, but I think it's been well worth doing. So basically we just, we're like, we just hunt for them. And when we're out and about, we read them wherever we find them, and the new ones we capture, circulate internally, and check them against our database. But yeah, I mean, that's basically how the process has worked from the beginning. And then in reaching out to the families, we also try to capture some basic information about the individual, and we include that together with the sticker. And then we also try to get a high quality JPEG from the family. So the actual picture that one of us took is actually an image behind the high quality JPEG image of the sticker. So if you look at it, you'll see that there's actually two versions of it, because it is kind of it's kind of neat to see where the sticker was or how it was out there in the real world, but then actually to be able to read it in a good way, because certainly speaking for myself, I am not a particularly good photographer. So it's good that we have a proper image.
Okay, now I have a lot more logistical questions. This one's an easy one. Has there been a family who has not wanted it to be on your site? I mean, it's already out in public. Is there anybody who, for some reason, has not wanted it to be featured?
No one has said, I don't want it to be featured. That has never happened. But we did have, I think, one family at the beginning who was just like, I can't deal with reading a consent form. Like, it's too much. And so that happened at least one time, maybe twice. But honestly, we're just being extra cautious because, every family experiences this kind of loss in their own particular way. And the last thing that we want is to be a source of upset to any of these families. And we certainly wouldn't want to surprise them by putting a sticker up that they didn't know was going to go up on a website. So yeah, that's basically been the approach from the beginning.
And how do you find the families?
Sometimes the stickers have a QR code that will take you, for example, to either an Instagram page, and we can usually contact them through the Instagram page, or it might take you to a family website, and we can contact them potentially from there. There are other ways to search. There are some other databases we can access. But that is, I think, the painstaking part of this effort. And so we have a decent number of stickers that are kind of in the queue that we've found. We want to add them. They're in our internal spreadsheet, but they're not yet up on the site because we still need to track down a family member.
Do families ever contact you to add a sticker?
Yeah, we've encouraged families to contact us. They can submit on the website, they can submit their sticker, they can sign, they can execute the consent form. We actually created our own sticker with a QR code to put near these clusters of stickers so that, in theory, somebody could go and see our sticker, scan the QR code, and learn about what we're doing, and then submit that way. Because basically, a lot of the families will go back again and again to renew their sticker. Like if they put a sticker up 3 or 4 months ago, they might go back to the train station and see. And if the sticker is peeling off, they might replace it. That kind of thing. So we've gotten some through our own QR code, our own sticker. But yeah, we've tried to come up with every possible way that we can think of to bring more into the system.
There are so many important archiving projects that are going on in Israel right now, among other things, because of the revisionist history that we're watching unfold before our eyes. I always come back to the gold standard, of course, which was Spielberg's Shoah project, how he managed to get every living Holocaust survivor, apparently every one of them, to document their story. So I know you already said your hope is to get all the stickers archived. Do you have like a game plan for achieving that?
I think to keep doing what we're doing, we want to keep at this for at least another year. I think our work isn't done yet. And I think that, to my, I'm happy to see that the stickers are not being, there's no movement to kind of move on from October 7th and take the stickers down or cover them up or anything of the sort. They will disappear eventually just by the nature of how the world works, but yeah, I think we're going to really devote this year with a strong focus on getting as many into the system as we can before the project potentially transitions out into something else.
Amazing. Okay, Jeff, I'm going to ask you if you could walk us through the site, at least, I mean, obviously not the whole thing. We're not going to go through 500 stickers, but could you maybe share some of the most inspiring or touching stories that stand out for you in compiling this archive?
Absolutely. Let me share my screen. This is the sticker that I first saw that first inspired me to pay attention. You didn't fight for the hatred of those in front of you, rather for the love of those behind you, which I truly found to be so so powerful. Let me quickly pull up this one, and this was a family that I actually was able to meet with. So this young man was in the paratroop and a paratroop commando unit, and when he was a teenager, his dream was to become a commando, and he wrote this on his wall. Everyone wants to succeed, but not everyone is willing to pay the price in order to succeed. And the price that he was willing to pay was he would get up in the middle of the night. His father would take him out to these sand dunes, and he would crawl in the dunes with a mock assault rifle on his back and basically train. And his father actually filmed it and showed me some of this footage, which was remarkably powerful and really moving. And so he really, this was a slogan that he didn't just admire, but he really incorporated it into his life, which, you know, to me is just so powerful. And this really encapsulates, I think, for me, what has been a primary goal of this project, which is not just memory and not just honoring the fallen, but really doing what we can to take these powerful messages and to bring them forward, to learn, not just to honor, but also to learn from these young people and to see if we can't do things to make our own lives more meaningful.
Hold on, sorry, can you go back for one sec?
Of
I just
course.
want people to get a full understanding of the website. Can you just scroll down so they could see what? So we've got just really quickly the elements, the sticker that you found, the high res, and then if you scroll down, for those who don't know, what it says on the right in Hebrew is exactly the same as what it says on the left. We've got his name in Hebrew, his name, the dates of his birth and in his death. Oh, do you not have a story for this one? Oh, there it is. Yeah. I'm like, this can't be the end because I'm trying to prove a point here. Yes. And so now again, there's the Hebrew and the English, very short story behind. Oh, okay. So he's one of the ones who got a video.
Yeah, so a part of the project has been we created something called the story behind the sticker. We're working with a an influencer who's a documentarian, a videographer, and she has we've reached out to several of the families, and they've agreed to participate in these short videos that tells about their family member, about this individual, and among other things, shares the story of how this particular motto or saying was selected and placed on the sticker. And this is Amit's mother, who was there in that meeting. And when the father showed the video, she turned to me and said, I actually can't watch it. And because it was so powerful and moving that to see this young man, you know, pursuing his dream. But of course he's no longer with us. So this is another feature of the site, and we have a half dozen or so of these individual videos, and hopefully we'll be doing some additional ones.
Okay.
Let me share another one with you. This is let's see.
I think you're going to have to X out the guys. Oh, never mind. Could you just
So,
show really quickly when you click select category so okay, next, so people can see. Okay, go on.
okay. So basically, this guy was just an extraordinary individual. He was beloved. He was a major in a commando unit. As in this picture, he was described as someone who was always smiling. He was an inspirational commander who cared for his troops, always set a personal example. In his spare time, was particularly fond of a classic Jewish book of ethics called The Path of the Just. And this was his sticker: be a mensch, always listen before you speak, do be the first to respond in crisis. If you started something, finish it. If you finished, ask yourself what you could have done better and start again. Run every day. He was very into sport. And for me, there are several stickers like this, and I'll show another one in a moment, that it's almost like an entire life philosophy, a prescription for a life well lived, a life of doing, and a life of meaning, and a life of caring. And so, yeah, this was one of the ones that I really found quite powerful. One of the things that we've done too is we've created educational programs. We have an educator in the States who has are basically our director for the United States, Orly Braha, who has crafted programs and has been basically doing programs for the last year. And one of the things that's always been astonishing to me is that different stickers speak to different people. The ones that I find most moving, other people find other ones much more moving. And I think that's great. I actually think that's part of the power of the project, that there's something in it for everybody in terms of being inspired. And I think that's actually a wonderful thing.
And just really briefly, really quickly, for those of you who stop really quickly, so you can see that under the sticker are the categories that he has put this into. So for anybody who's just joining, all of these stickers are categorized by, I think you said 15 different sort of inspirational qualities.
And I'll show that. Let me go to that screen. So basically, you can search by word, or these are all the categories. And so, for example, you can just hit a category, and then you will get all the stickers that fall into that category. Oh, let me. I'm sorry. Let me pull. Yeah, we'll get. So now you have all of the ones that fall in this case into life rules.
These look a lot, just to be clear, these are not just soldiers, these are also Nova, people who fell at Nova, people who might have fallen in a kibbutz attack, correct?
Yeah, and we basically made it was one of our original decisions, which was it's all post October 7 folks that we've lost, civilian soldiers alike. And I think that was absolutely the right decision. In fact, with your permission, I'll share really quickly a sticker for one of the Nova folks. And this is also one that we did a video about. Focus on what moves you forward and move on from what doesn't. And this wonderful young woman was just, she was full of joy, had a spirit of adventure, and was one of those killed at Nova. At one point, it seemed like she was going to successfully escape, but then ended up getting trapped and ended up in one of those small bomb shelters and was killed there. And this is her mother sharing the story. And the mother has really tried to incorporate that message of focusing on what moves you forward and moving on from what doesn't, to try to use that to try as best as she can to not get trapped in her grief and to try to move her life forward in a positive way. And so I think that, again, to me, that it's just a wonderful, moving illustration of how these stickers can help folks, in their own lives.
Amazing.
Let me see. So I'll exit out of that. And in that spirit, I'll show one. Here we go. This was also part of what drew me to it. So I'm a runner, and I do marathons and things of that sort. And at marathons, you tend to see signs that family members are holding up. And one that I have seen often is some version of this. In this case, the difficulty is temporary, the pride is eternal. And I was doing my longest race. It was a 72-mile race around Lake Tahoe. And about a little less than halfway through, at about mile 28, I started to have intense left knee pain and considered dropping out of the race. And then I thought of this expression and told myself, if you can find a way to make it through this race, you'll have something that you can treasure forever. Like, it's going to be painful and unpleasant, but if you can make it, it will be worth it. And I was able to make it. And this kind of expression, I think the version that I was more familiar with is pain is temporary, victory is forever, something like that. And so yeah, I do believe kind of in the power of inspirational slogans of this type, and I think this is a wonderful way of bringing them to people's attention and using them as a basis for teaching about them.
So you're considering making this into a book, yes?
Yes. The idea basically would be to talk about the sticker phenomenon, and then to have chapter authors providing their own perspectives on what this means, what it means to them, what it means for the country, and perhaps focusing on the messages that they find most inspirational. So we'll see, but that absolutely is one of the projects that we potentially have in mind as this continues.
Amazing.
If
And
I can, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
yeah, go ahead and look. And are you also looking to expand the YouTube shorts? Because that really does add such depth to, because the stories that are listed on this website tend to be, just the basic facts, but the videos really bring in the emotions. So I hope that we'll be seeing that initiative expanding as well.
Yeah, that's our hope. And I agree with you. I think you get much more of an understanding of the individual and how the sticker came into being, and what the family hopes to see happen with that message. This particular individual was in Yamam, which is the elite police hostage rescue unit, and this is in his handwriting. Which is pretty neat. Don't ask for it to be easier, ask to become stronger. Don't ask for fewer problems, ask for more skills. Don't ask for fewer challenges, ask for more insight. The great value in life comes not from what you received, but from the kind of person you become. And again, I think just very powerful, like it encapsulates in many ways, I think, an entire kind of approach, an entire approach to life. And I think one thing that people have become aware of in the course of this war is the participation of Druze soldiers from the Druze community, who have this astonishing legacy of loyalty and participation, in that they are drafted, they serve with distinction, and there is this incredible, I've heard it described as a kind of blood, I think a blood covenant or something, between Israeli Jews and Israeli Druze. And so this particular individual was actually the highest ranking soldier to be killed in the war. Let me misspelled his name. And I just love his sticker. So he was a colonel. We insist on preserving our humanity and choosing life anew each and every day. And I just think that's wonderful. And especially coming from a soldier. And I love that that is the ethos of a soldier, of a commander, of someone of such high rank, who was in a position to influence, so many, below him. So yeah, we were We were thrilled to be able to add this one to the site. Let's see. This was another one that I really found powerfully moving. This was something that this individual wrote on his phone before going into combat after Oct this was after October 7th. It was a few weeks later. And he wrote what basically amounted to an ethical will. And this was someone who was beloved. He worked with kids with special needs. He was just an extraordinary individual. The greatest quality that a person can have is the ability to make another person happy. And you know, again, the idea that the family would want to share this message, I think is pretty amazing.
Yes.
Let's see. Let me show you. I'll show you one. Let me show you two more with your permission.
Absolutely.
This
It
one
sure
is the
paints a very different picture of the IDF than the world would like to believe.
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I have never even heard of an Israeli delighting in the suffering of folks in Gaza. You know, it doesn't mean that folks here aren't supportive of the military's efforts to prosecute this war to a successful conclusion, but there's no joy in seeing Gazan civilians who become casualties because there's some Hamas command post under their house or school or hospital or you know or who knows what. You know that there's no joy in that, and I think you see it in these stickers. So this one I really found to be so joyful. The day will come when your life will pass before your eyes. Make sure it's worth watching. I just think that's great. And I spoke to this soldier's father, and he told me that on Nadav's WhatsApp page, this was the slogan that was on there. And we did actually, this was also a story behind the sticker. That's his wife, and she talks about how that really was the life that he led. He led a life of joy, fit so much into his short life, and left behind a wife and a son, but always smiling. And there's some nice video of him in there. So yeah, it's you know, for me, it's been a wonderful project. It's been meaningful, and it's given me an ability in my own small way to at least do something during this time of war, and to try to internalize the spirit of volunteering that you have here in this country. And you know, for me, this has been my opportunity to at least contribute something.
One of the things that I think is not think has been so striking, honestly, coming back to the concept of Israeli resilience and happiness, what is to see how resilient the families have been. I mean, Rachel Goldberg Polen, I think, being sort of the most prominent of the faith-based family members that never lost faith, never lost hope, never succumbed to the sadness that, even though they felt it so profoundly, there's this understanding that tragically, this is part of what it means to be a Jew, and that these realities that we face, we don't have a choice. We only have a choice of how we react to them. And when I watch videos of people who have lost loved ones and how they talk about moving on and how they talk about the future and how they talk about the memory in such a positive and uplifting way, again, I don't know if this comes back to the concept that everyone has served. And understands on a very visceral level what it means to be willing to risk and or give your life for this cause. But it's astounding to watch because I don't think I would have the kind of composure that I see from Israelis. Last time I was there, which was in August, which is relevant because there were still 20 hostages, I was at Hostages Square and I sat with Omri's family. They had a tent set up where I guess they've been every day at Omri and Miran. And I just looked at his father and I started crying. And he's like, "Don't cry, don't cry." And he was smiling. He's like, "We don't cry in here." You know, he had so much faith, and I just couldn't. It made me cry more that he was so, positive and hopeful, that it broke my heart even more to watch him ultimately, thank God, thank God, thank God, Omri is now home. But here I am, this girl from Los Angeles across the world whose heart is so rended by these hostages and their families who just hold that space and are so strong. It has nothing to do with not feeling. It has to do with that they understand the full spectrum of this experience of the sadness with the strength. And the hopelessness with the hope. And as you said earlier in the show, the bitterness with the sweet. And that's a very, very, is really characteristic that's amazing to behold. And you do see it. I watched all your YouTube shorts, but you see that exhibited by everyone who speaks. And there's no being beaten down. Israel cannot be defeated. The Jewish people cannot be defeated. The Jewish soul cannot be broken. It can be torn, but it will always be put back together.
I mean, it's fascinating. I heard a statistic years ago that through all of Israel's wars, terrorism, and all of the rest, it was still the case that more Jews died in a single day in Auschwitz than had been murdered in Israel's history. Now, it may be now up to a day and a half or something like that, but when you consider the cost of statelessness. And that, and what that led to ultimately. And then you compare that to today. I do think that people here have a historic sense that we are privileged to live in a strong state, in a state with, an air force that can do the kinds of things that it did over the skies of Iran this past June. That's a pretty remarkable thing. That a people that was considered, the characterization of Jews during the Holocaust as a people who went like lambs to the slaughter, now there's a very different perception of them. Stan Andrews wrote a letter to his best friend explaining his decision to go to Israel to fight. And one of the things that he says at the very close of the letter is, when these people get through, the first thing that you think about when you hear the word Jew will no longer be a shopkeeper or a pawnbroker. And think about that today. Who would jump to that conclusion today when they hear the word Jew, shopkeeper or pawnbroker, much less Israeli or Israeli soldier? And the folks who demonize Israel and Israelis, even there, you can see that certainly there's a recognition that Israel is a very capable country, and a country that takes its defense quite seriously, and that is quite a change in the Jewish condition from where things were prior to May 14th, 1948, and certainly during the Holocaust.
Did you say you had one more sticker that you wanted to share?
I had one more. Let me show you one
Okay.
more. So this one was a captain. She was actually killed on October 7th. And I love her message. Remember that you came to this world to change things, advocate for things, and to make an impact. So make an impact. I love the encouragement. I just think it is so directly the kind of thing that has drawn me to these stickers in the first place. Like, basically, what can I do to make people have better lives? And really, it's a credit to the families that they have taken this moment of unimaginable pain and tried to at least extract something out of it that can help other people. And I think that is a that's a remarkable thing. And there's also a quality to some of these stickers, messages about taking chances and getting out of your comfort zone and living life to the fullest and all of the rest. And especially for those who died at Nova, you on a certain level look at it and think, well, that didn't work out for you as an individual. And yet I still think, and I think that the families recognize this, it is the right message to us as a people, to us as a nation, that we shouldn't stop living because of October 7th. We should continue to take chances, to live life, to seek joy, to have new experiences. And for us collectively, that is a good way, a positive way to live life, even if, for an individual, it could have a tragic ending. So yeah, so as you can see, I really am passionate about these stickers and what they represent.
Yeah. And I love that these inspirational quotes that inspired each of these individuals in life, now they become a tool for these people to inspire others. If it's not naive to say, for eternity, with this archive. So I thank you so much for sharing. You could I let's end the screen share, and I'll just ask one or two more questions. And I want to go back to just to sort of sum this all up, because you again are a recent U.S. immigrant to Israel, 2022. As such, what one message do you wish you could make to make Americans understand Israel better?
It's a great question. I think there's a great concern on the part of people who love Israel in the States that Israel should do a better job of explaining itself, should do a better job of explaining what it's doing in Gaza, why there are civilian casualties, in addition to the Hamas terrorists that they are killing. And it's important that Israel do the best job that it can do in explaining itself. But I think in some ways, at least to me, that's the job of others. I think more important is to really learn about Israel and about Israelis, about the history of this country, about why it came into existence. Why do we have a state of Israel? What was the world like when we didn't have a state of Israel for the Jewish people? How people live here and what kind of country this is. I think folks should visit. If they're younger, they should take a birthright trip. I think, really getting to know the country, the people, and looking at the positives here. It's not all about war and fighting terrorism and all of the rest of it. This is a place that is bustling, it's growing. Everywhere I look in Tel Aviv, I see construction cranes putting up new schools all the time. I walk along the beach and all manner of sport is taking place out there. There's kite surfing out in the ocean. People are playing volleyball with their feet. There's gymnastics going on out there. And this is a country that is full of life in the most challenging of circumstances. And it's a wonderful thing. And so I would encourage folks to engage with the Israel story and to try to learn more about it. And not only about war and peace and Gaza and all of the rest, but really why this country's here and what it's all about.
And this is for Jews and non-Jews alike. I have to
Absolutely.
say, to encapsulate what you just said, if I could, in one sentence, would be seeing is believing. We hear a lot of lies here in America or in the rest of the world about Israel. But when you visit Israel, you understand. Okay, last question, Jeff. What does Am Yisrael Chai mean to you?
I think, you know, I think people here are living it every day. You know, you walk in this country and you are walking in some of the same places that Abraham walked 4,000 years ago, that King David and after him, his son King Solomon, ruled over more than 2,000 years ago, that the Jewish people were exiled from 2,000 years ago. And it is an unbelievable privilege to be here now with the renewal of Jewish independence in this land. It's an absolutely remarkable thing. You go to a wedding here, and of course, the one of the songs that they sing and joyfully dance to is, you know, that we will yet hear in Jerusalem the sound of brides and grooms, and that is something that is thousands of years old, and people are literally doing that today. And the exiles are being gathered in from all four corners of the world, and it is. When you step back and really ponder it in the kind of broader kind of scope of history, it's astonishing. It's we see Am Yisrael Chai I see it every time I walk out in the streets of Tel Aviv.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for the project. The Stickers of Meaning has such great meaning. I hope that it only continues to expand. And I really, actually, if I could use a prayer on this, I do hope that every single person eventually is memorialized because each person represents a universe. So thank you for doing your part in archiving the universe.
Thank you so much. It has been truly a labor of love for me, so I really appreciate that.
Yes. And anybody who is interested in following the Stickers of Meaning, in visiting the archive, or also donating to help those who are working so hard to maintain that, it's stickersofmeaning.com. And the link is in the description. So thank you so much, Jeff. And Om Yisrael Chai.
Thank you so much, Shauna. It's really been my pleasure.